The Westward Journey by Ellen Dryden, with Carolyn Jones, Tracy Ann Overman, and Marcia Warren.
I left my mother, I left my father, I left my brothers and my sisters too. I left my home and my kind relations, I left them all for the love of you.
September 17th, 1845. This is the most terrible day of my life, and there's no one I can share my fears with. Lucy is a child, and my dear sister is many hundreds of miles away. My husband tells me that our financial state is desperate. However hard we work, he says, we cannot push the price of wheat up any higher than 10 cents a bushel. His father writes him that they are burning grain for fuel on the steamboats on the Missouri River and the Mississippi. Thomas showed me a book he has bought that he reads more eagerly than the Bible, The Emigrant's Guide to Oregon and California, by Mr. Lansford Hastings. How I hate the sound of those few simple words. My father and mother-in-law are to join us. We are all going to sell everything that we have and travel to Independence, Missouri. We will winter there, preparing our wagons and buying in provisions, and then in April, when the snows have melted, we shall set out on this awful journey. The very thought fills me with dread, but I must school in my thoughts and my fears. I have traveled so far already, but now there is neither money nor room for us in Illinois. Thomas and his father believe we will find room and riches beyond our dreams in Oregon or California, I do not know which, and that my health would improve. I only know that I am afraid.
Are you going to get back into that wagon, Lucy?
Not till I thought out what I'm going to say to Grandma.
She was shouting for you all afternoon. Where you been?
Over to the Bastion's wagon. Ellie Jem and Mr. Baston are off sick. Mrs. Baston was driving the team. She let me take a hand while she was off in the wagon, seeing to Jem and Ellie. Mr. Baston was too sick to know what day it was.
You better keep quiet about that. Grandma ain't going to be too pleased you riding off to help the Bastons when your own mother's laid up.
Oh, it's her shoo me out the way this morning. You won't say anything, will you, George?
Shouldn't think so. I won't need to, though. Old Ma Casey saw you. That Lucy Riley, Callie got an off on a mule, sitting astride just like a man. Skirts all over the place. Did you ever see the last?
She didn't tell Grandma, Pa.
She was shouting her head off to anybody who'd listen.
Oh. I got a pair of your trousers on under my skirt.
Grandma'll have to skin off your back. If Pa doesn't get to you first, I wouldn't let on to either one of them if I were you.
I wanted to talk to Mrs. Baston. I don't know what's the matter with Mother. Grandma's worried as well. You can tell. Why she's so bad-tempered. Mr. Baston's very sick. He keeps coughing all the time. Terrible fever. And if he tries to sit up, he falls back again. He's sick if he tries to eat.
Ellie and Jim the same?
No, it's not so bad. I couldn't talk to Mrs. Baston, though. She was just thinking about them. I'm worrying.
No point in fretting about things before they happen. Nobody's going to do this trip without a few headaches.
George, I'm scared to go back in the wagon. To the mother.
You'll be a darn sight more scared if they have to come and fetch you.
Mrs. Baston said they want to get across the Platte and camp on the other side.
They might. I don't reckon they'll get to the ford in time, and if they're sick, well, that might be a help, though. They'd be more concerned to help her across the river fast than him.
That's why she wants to keep up with the others. Mr. Baston and the Creevers and the Walkers and some of the others split up with the rest. He had a quarrel with Colonel Russell.
Joe Baston would have a quarrel with his own shadow. He didn't like it when Mr. Russell was voted captain.
Oh, were you still part of Colonel Russell's train?
Just about. Except Pa would have made a better captain than any of them. Old Baston's right, though. 100 or more wagons is too many. Nobody can keep control of all of them.
Why are we so slow? Why don't we make a dash for the river?
And eat more of this dirt than we're doing already? And wear out the cattle before we got a quarter of the way? Hey, that Foster turned his wagon over trying to get to the head of the queue at the Big Blue. Team went dashing on up the embankment, and the wagon tipped right over. At least that's what they say.
What happened?
Well, apparently Caleb started fighting the Teamster, and Sally Foster bowled her head off at Caleb for breaking all her china and her pictures she brought to make the wagon look pretty. Uh-oh, you better get going. There's Pa.
No point in running away now. See me.
Lucy, there's no need for you to be out here. You should stay in the wagon when you can. Do your own task, not try to take over your brother.
I'm sorry, Pa. I'd just like to be out in the air and watch the river and the sandhills. There's nothing to look at in the wagon. Grandma did chase me out this morning. She said there was nothing for me to do.
We've been looking at sandhills for the last 7 days. Haven't you seen enough of them? I'm ready for a change of scene.
Oh, but this is the most romantic yet. They look just like enormous snowdrifts over there.
Yes. And trees don't grow in snowdrifts or sandhills. There's not going to be a stick of wood for the fire. You can spend all the time you want in your romantic snowdrifts looking for buffalo chips when we make camp. Now get into the wagon and see what your mother needs.
Yes, Pa.
Where are we going to camp tonight?
A few hundred yards ahead, near the hills. There's some standing pools. The water's not good, but it'll just about do. That's our best bet for tonight. We should be in sight of the ford by tomorrow, and when we cross the flat, we can maybe lay out a day. Give your mother a chance to recover.
Then we'll be even further behind the others.
That's no bad thing. I'm not too happy about taking orders I don't see the point of from a man I don't reckon too highly. I want to choose my own camping ground, my own pace of traveling, and my own route if necessary. It only takes a dozen of us to help our wagons across the river. I don't like waiting while 100 or more make their way over, going at the speed of the slowest. And getting stuck behind that prairie palace car the Reeds and the Donners have brought with them. They didn't leave Springfield, Illinois to go to California. They brought it with them.
But we're making good time. 20 miles a day.
You're either an optimist or a fool if you think that, George. This is the easy bit. It's going to take you a lot longer to get to Oregon if you go overestimating now.
Well, even when the cattle strayed and we didn't get going till late in the day, we made 13 miles.
Oh, well, Fred, did you need me, Grandma?
About time, too. I've been hollering for you since we nooned. You're never here when you're wanted, and you turn up too late. Covered in dust, looking like an eaten squirrel. I reckon that's what we should do to you. Take that pinafore off, dress you in deer skin.
I wonder what Bastin's wearing. Oh. Sit.
I don't know. I want to keep my hands off you. Isn't your own mother sickening for you?
I don't want to... How is my...
No, now she asks. Right. It's time you shaped up a bit and stopped trying to pretend you're what you're not. The good Lord knows this isn't a pleasure trip. You're not a child. You're too old for this come-day-go-day behavior. You're 15 years old. And all the running off and riding mules and cracking whips like the lads isn't going to change the fact that this is what you'll come to. That's how your mother is. And that skinned rabbit's your new sister.
Yeah, exactly.
I can set to win, help me.
How are they?
Poorly. I don't know if we'll keep either of them. I think we've got a better chance with your mother than that poor little scrap. Well, there's not much to encourage you to stay alive in this godforsaken wilderness.
Oh, I think it's beautiful. And she'll think it's beautiful as well, because she's beautiful. And it's where she was born.
Beautiful? You got a funny idea of beauty. Nothing but stranded savages and wild animals and water you can't drink. Unless we're very careful, she'll die here as well as be born.
Oh,
no, don't start. Crying's not going to help anybody. My mother lost 4 babies and raised 7. That was back in civilization. Oh, never thought I'd hear myself calling that miserable slum civilization. Piled in on top of one another. My mother's babies died from foul air and sleeping 6 to a bed. No, I'll do my best to keep this one. Stop her dying from wide open spaces.
Has she got a name yet?
For what it's worth. It's twice as big as she is, Virginia, with all outlandish names. Because your mother wished she'd never left there. Now, when we make a camp, I want you to fetch me some eggs and some milk, and you can get me a little drop of brandy from that barrel. It'll do your mother more good than your father and all his thirsty friends.
Oh.
You're awake, are you?
Oh.
How are you feeling?
I don't know. Tired. Sick. Give me my baby.
Go on. Go on, Lucy. Pick her up. She won't break. Give it to your mother.
Oh my goodness. She's like a... She's got chicken bones.
Poor little bird. I'm sorry, little one. I'm sorry. You're going to have to be a woman when you grow up. We'll have to fatten her up. She's not a very plump little bird. Oh, are we going to stop soon? I'm a little tired of feeling every pebble. Lucy, you're going to have to help me look after your sister.
That she will. I don't think we got much chance of turning this harem scarab into a lady. But if it's the last thing I do, I'll turn her into a decent living woman.
We'll be stopping soon. We'll be at Fort Laramie in about 10 days, George says. Huh? Then he can really rest up.
10 days? You've got a nasty habit of turning into 20. So they'll start raising our hopes.
Whoa! Mother?
Yes, give me hand down.
Yeah. Oh! We'll camp here tonight. Tomorrow, we should make it to the Platte.
Well, this Platte River's going to be worth all the fuss. Nobody can talk about anything else. It's all you hear. When shall we get to the Platte? Mind you, I'll be quite happy. If we have to lay by a few days, like we did up a big blue. Mouth would thrive a lot better on some of that fish you caught than...
How's she doing?
Fighting. Both of them. I'm going to make sure we're not left alone. Lucy can take a turn to sit in while I'm cooking. Martha's sleeping just now, but it's not an healthy sleep.
Wednesday, May 20th, 1846. We are now beyond the Missouri River. We have left the States behind. Ahead of us lie the great uncivilized plains inhabited only by the Indians. The river was muddy and fast flowing. We took the wagons off the wheels, emptied them of all our provisions, used the strongest wagon beds to make a ferry boat, and hauled them across by means of ropes and pulleys. The animals swam across with ropes tied onto the cattle's horns and round the horses' and mules' necks, and all our belongings were brought over on rafts. Lucy, my mother-in-law, Mrs. Hannah Riley, and I squatted like tailors on the wagon bed and tried not to seem too afraid as the current took us a long way downstream, and the men had great work dragging the wagons back to the place on the opposite bank where we wanted to be. Then, as we began to pack all our goods back into the wagons, it started to rain heavily, great drops that even beat their way inside. Thursday, May 21st. A bright and cheerful day. We remained in camp, so we were able to do the washing and dry out our clothes so cruelly soaked yesterday. I could not help looking back across the river to the places we have come from. Sunday, May 31st. The journey is pleasant. The road's good, with plenty of good grazing for the stock. I'm very glad we brought the chickens and the 2 milch cows with us. We have fresh milk to drink in the mornings, and by the evening the milk in the churns has turned into very fine butter and delicious buttermilk. Lucy brought me a bunch of primroses and wild tulips, which cheered me greatly.
Did you want something, Mother?
Lucy. Where's Hannah?
Over by the fire. I helped her serve up the food to the men, and with the clearing up and the cooking for tomorrow noon.
Uh-huh.
And I made the coffee, and Grandma showed me how to start off the bread dough.
Did you have something to eat?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Why don't you go and be with the others for a while? Join in the dance and enjoy yourself.
Oh, I didn't do that. Grandma's giving me my orders. I can't disobey.
No, you can't.
She left you some orders, too. Can't you take a little bit more of the milk and eggs and these currants?
Yes, I'll try a little later. I don't seem to want to eat.
It's such an effort. Did you find the currants?
Yeah, there were lots. Mm-hmm. Red and white and choke cherries. And I found some green peas growing wild, just like green peas. Only the leaves were different.
Is it going to rain again?
No, I shouldn't think so. You can just see the stars wherever you look. And the campfires. You can't see where the stars end and the sparks begin. It's very beautiful.
Beautiful? No, I don't think it's very beautiful. I can't love a place where there are no trees. It's very grand and strange, but when I look out of the wagon, I just see all the miles we got to go.
Don't forget, though, Ma, when we get to Oregon, those pigs will be running around ready-cooked with knives and forks sticking out of their backs, Mr. Burnett told Grandpa.
A lot of people said a lot of fine things about Oregon, and your Grandpa listened to them all.
Mrs. Baston said they may change their minds and go to California.
Well, that's just foolishness. What's Amy Baston going to do if Jim has to go and fight the Mexicans?
Don't think Pa want to go to California, do you?
We can't go to California. We took all that trouble painting Oregon and our names on the side of the wagon. Make us look so foolish.
Do you want to go back home, really?
No, there's nowhere to go back to. But I could wish we hadn't started out. Oh, no. Now, you just stop encouraging all this weakling talk, young woman. Oregon has got to be a better place to build a life than Illinois. I did all my crying on my own when your father brought me from Virginia to New Salem. And George was born, and I settled in to make a life for us. And then I want you to write me a letter for Lavinia telling her our news. There's bound to be somebody going back to the States from Fort Laramie. They'll take it for us. You tell her she has another niece.
Uh-huh.
And tell her what a grand adventure we're having and how happy we are and how we're all having the time of our lives.
Wouldn't that be a bit untruthful, Mother?
You don't suppose I'm going to tell the truth to my own sister, do you? You help me sit up, eh? I'll try and eat a little something. Oh, dear. My head won't believe the wagon stopped. Now, here. Let me try a spoonful of those currants. Hmm? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't seem to... I must lie down.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Just fix Grandma.
No. I'll be all right. You just sit there and watch the sky for me.
Is the baby sleeping? Do you want me to take her?
You know, you leave her with me. She's fast asleep.
She does sleep a lot. Is she all right?
I hope so. Babies do their growing. Getting strong while they're sleeping. You were the sleepiest baby I've ever known. I had to bang a pan lid with a spoon over your crib to wake you. But you were a bonnier baby when you started. This little one wasn't ready to be born. We must get Reverend Hacker to baptize her. Lucy, will you get me my little notebook? It's down by my feet somewhere.
Here you are. Do you want a candle? Can't write lying down.
No, I'm not going to write anything. Lucy, I've kept this diary every day since we left Independence. I started it when your father came home and said we were selling up and going to Oregon. I didn't have the heart to keep it regularly then. You were too young to remember all the anxiety. But I haven't missed a day since we started out. I want you to keep it for me. Write up the journey if I can't.
Mother,
it'll be good practice if we're going to make a school marm of you when we get to Oregon.
I don't know if I want to be a school marm.
It's what I want for you. A little bit of independence while you look around. It's not going to be easy when we get there. Never is for a woman. I don't want you running off and getting married to the first boy you danced with like Polly Fielder. But this is the last place I would have chosen for your sister to be born. It's not what you want yet. You've got a good head on your shoulders.
Grandma says it's time I grew up and settled down and read my own family.
Grandma isn't always right about everything. No, don't you tell her I said that.
She's got great hopes of George and Rebecca.
Oh, no. Rebecca's very young. She may be 17, but she's younger inside than you are and a lot more flighty.
And George is so slow. Grandma says if he doesn't shift, she'll take up with Francis Lander or even Jim Baston when he gets better.
Well, I sure don't want to see you flirting with all the boys the way she does.
I don't flirt.
No, I know.
But trying to compete with the boys is going to bring you a lot more grief. Mm-hmm. My name's more her size. Why don't you call her by her name?
Superstition? Lucy, will you promise me to keep the diary?
What do you put in it?
You can read it. Just try to tell myself what it's been like, what we have to do. Stray thoughts. Let your father write all about the miles we're covering, the routes we take. I think he's keeping a journal, as well as writing back to the newspapers. I think he'd burst with pride if they ever printed one. Promise me, though, will you?
Yes. Oh, don't look like that.
You don't have to start yet a while. There's one other thing. I think you can understand this better than anyone else. Your grandma would be angry, and your father would... If I die...
No.
Don't say anything. If I die, make sure they bury me as deep as they can. 6 feet or more. And put a fence around or some rocks on top. I don't want to be dug up and eaten by the wolves. And if I'm deep enough, or perhaps you could put my clothes in a box on the top, the Indians wouldn't have to dig me up to steal them.
No, Mother, don't.
Lucy, you've seen the graves along the trail. The little messages and the bones scattered. It's not morbid to think about it. It might happen to any one of us. And you wouldn't be able to come back and put flowers on my grave. I need to know that I'm safe buried. Oh. Cheer up. I do not intend to die. Certainly not here. I might be able to rest easy under a tree, but I'm beginning to wonder if we'll ever see another tree. Sand and sage.
Current.
The Indians are welcome to this place. And the buffalo. Did you have buffalo steak for supper?
No. Francis shot an antelope. It was really good.
I thought it was going to be such a great adventure when we crossed over the Missouri into Indian territory, but nothing changed much. It's starting to change now, though. Scenery. The way we live. You will make sure, won't you? My soul couldn't rest quiet if my body was scattered to the wind.
Yes, I will. And I'd like it to be the same for me if I...
Sunday, June 14th. Cool and cloudy in the morning. Fine and warm in the middle of the day. Lucy milked the cows this morning and sat with me till I fell asleep. She's a tower of strength. Nearly all the women have gone to the Sunday service, but very few of the men. They still prefer to skulk away and play cards.
We need God's help to reach our destination safely, and I am not alone in wishing that our menfolk would take more part in our worship. Alas, I am not well enough to get out of the wagon today, so all I can do is pray here alone.
Jonah Hart!
Huh?
Mr. Hart!
Whoa. Who's that?
Francis Lander. I've come to take over car.
About time. You should have been here an hour ago.
No, I should not. Now, what have you been doing? There's four horses gone, a couple of mules, and God knows how many cattle.
That can't be. I've been sitting here the past hour waiting for you to turn up.
You must have had your back turned to a man, or are you blind as well as dumb?
Don't you give me none of that, boy. Just because you can crack a whip don't make you no teamster. You want to do a man's work, you get on and do it. Don't you go crossing them and know how to do a day's work by doing it, not reading it up in books.
You don't need books to recognize a Pawnee horse thief. You've been asleep, you old fool, and you lost half our... Look at all that mud churned up. The goddamn Indians have been here and taken those horses from 10 feet away. They could take the shirt off your back and you wouldn't even notice. Oh, no. You were so busy looking out for me, you didn't see them. What did you do a deal with?
You goddamn yes, you bastard! Nobody talks to me like that, you... Oh,
stop it, you fool! You want to take the other cattle off?
Tuesday, June 23rd. a cold, blustery day with the wind whipping up a tornado. We reached Fort Laramie through a sandstorm. There were about 150 lodges of Sioux there before us. Tomorrow morning, we'd give them a great feast. Pa says they seem friendly enough, and tomorrow they will smoke the pipe of peace and exchange gifts with them. Then they're moving on to make war on the Pawnee.
Do you want me to hold the umbrella over the fire or the dough, Mrs. Riley?
Well, you'd better keep it over the fire, Rebecca. Oh. Nobody will get any breakfast if that fire doesn't perk up. A bit more water's not going to out the bread. Lucy, you better try putting some more chips on that fire. Mm-hmm. Don't be careful, child. If you knock that kettle over, we're done for.
Oh, this water is so nasty.
Mm. It's very alkali.
I don't trust the water from those standing pools. We had a cow take sick and die a while back, and I'm sure it was the water poisoned it.
Well, there was plenty of coffee in it, and we won't notice the taste. Oh. It won't hurt us more.
Do you think that Martha could manage a little ginger tea if I made her some?
She'll not manage anything this morning. She was tossing and turning and sweating all night long. Oh.
Well, what about the little one?
You know, Elizabeth, I don't know, but what there might be a bit of improvement there. Lucy, is that fire caught yet?
Coming along. His chips are a bit wet.
Oh. My husband told me he'd sold up everything and we were going to Oregon to California to both. I didn't say much when I realized we were going to travel 2,000 miles in a glorified farm cart. And when he said I'd have to leave behind my rocking chair, the rest of my bookcase, my china cups and plates, I just said if I have to eat half tin, I'll eat half tin. It's all just food, isn't it? I even practiced cooking on an open fire in the yard. But if I'd known it was going to end up with him dead before he'd finished building the wagon. And me, standing in the pouring rain at 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to bake bread and cook bacon and beans on a pile of cowpats, that have started out east from Independence, not stopped till they got back to Manchester.
Do you really want to go back to England, Miss Riley?
I never wanted to leave. My mistake was marrying an Irishman with a chief each. Oh, glory be, we've got a fire. No, don't move the umbrella, Becky. You can start frying the bacon, Lucy. Mm-hmm. No, he had to run away from Ireland when he was a lad. I don't know what devilry he'd been up to. I was 17, working in a mill when I met him. I thought we were going to settle down and make a respectable life of it. Oh, no. He was going to make his fortune in America. Yeah, he should have mad to get to America. They can't rest till they get here. And we got to Boston. That didn't suit. Then we end up in Missouri. That was a mistake I keep quiet about. The way some of these women look down on you. They seem to think that's the only place you get common rowdy folk. They should have seen that flashy overdressed band from Baltimore off the boat at Independence. Disgusting drunk, lots of them. One of them fell in the water in all his fine clothes. Right, mind out, Lucy. Let me get this bread on the skillet. Careful! Don't take that bacon out. One thing I am never going to do is to handle that filthy buffalo dung. And you never convince me the food doesn't taste. Nobody ever told me we were going to run out of firewood.
Don't be downhearted, Mrs. Riley. It won't rain all day.
No, won't it? Oh, don't take any notice of me, Becky. I'm just a miserable old widow woman. It's having a good old grumble gets me through the day. I believe in looking on the black side, and you might get a nice surprise. Nice. Expect nothing, you won't be disappointed. I couldn't go all this way just on optimism like you. Still, you're young, you're American. It's only to be expected.
Aren't you American now, Mrs. Riley?
If the cat has kittens in the oven, you don't call them biscuits, you lady.
Breakfast be long?
It'll be a while yet. This fire is taking its time.
Francis, what happened to your face? You two have been fighting. George, I'd never have believed it of you.
No, not me. It was that old fool Jonah Hart. He went to sleep on guard. Indians took 4 horses, mules, cattle gone.
Oh.
Stolen or strayed, I don't know. I watched the rest of the night, but I didn't see anything. Jonah took a swing at me.
We're going to have to stay here, try and track down the stock. It could be miles away by now.
I'd have taken a lot more than a swing at Jonah if it had been me.
Hi, Jim. Well, find the cooker.
Where is Jonah Hart now?
He's with Pa. He's going to help us find the animals, then Pa's going to fire him.
Good. One less mouth to feed. Sly creature he is. Always trying to get more than his share.
Will he go back to the States?
He might. He'll probably try and get taken on as a hired man with one of the other wagons.
If they'll have him.
And if he goes on ahead, he'll maybe find somebody who doesn't know what he's done.
This means we'll be even further behind the others, Grandma. Mm. What about Mother? What if there's nobody to help us cross the river?
Oh, we'll soon catch up. It'll do her good. She's best her breast in here than jolting about in the mud.
Oh, with all this rain, we might not get across the river anyway for a day or so.
Why did Mr. Hart fight with you, Francis?
Because I woke him up.
No. I must get everything into the air. Can't blow away. Lucy!
Yes, Mother. What do you want?
She doesn't mean you now, Lucy. She's not here with us. She's back. Back in the storm.
Mustn't let the flower get wet. Oh, it's so cold. Hitch up your skirt. Don't drill it in the mud, Lucy. Keep the food dry. But don't sleep. Wet clothes.
Oh, cover her up.
She's so hot. She's burning.
I know. She has to sweat out the fever. Put another blanket over her.
Pa, what can we do?
Nothing we can do. Your grandma's given her some of the quinine. She's got to reach the crisis of this fever, and then she'll start to get better.
Grandma's still asleep. I better get some milk for the baby.
Leave it. It's asleep. Leave it with your mother. That's the best thing to do. You have to fight your own battles. Get on with your writing. Is it your grammar or your handwriting you're practicing? Just because your mother isn't able to keep after you, you know she wants you to. You can make your handwriting really fine when we're not on the move.
No, it's not that. Mother asked me to write a letter to Aunt Lavinia about the baby and everything.
Well, your Uncle Nathan's ready to follow on after us. He wants me to write him what he needs to do.
Paul, I don't know if I can concentrate with my...
Lucy, write your letter.
Dear brother-in-law, I received your letter asking information back in Independence in March. I've left answering you till I knew more about the journey. We are 575 miles along the road and about 60 miles past Fort Laramie.
Dear Aunt Lavinia, Mother is not well enough to write to herself, so I am telling you our news. I have a new sister, just 4 days old. Her name is Virginia. She is very small and rather sickly. Mother has a fever. Pa, George, and Grandma are all well, and so am I.
We are in a train of over 100 wagons, and it's a fine sight, all those white-topped wagons spread out across the plain as far as you can see.
George looks very fierce with a long-handled rifle, 2 pistols, and a bowie knife in his belt. Grandma said when she saw him, "What a blood-curdling sight. I'm scared to death. I do hope he doesn't hurt himself."
I reckon you need about $700. More if you buy your wagon instead of building it. Maybe $900 or $1,000. Don't skimp on the wagon. The wagon bed and sides should be built of good seasoned hardwood. It should take 2,500 pounds loaded and 2 to 4 yoke of oxen to pull it. Any more weight, and you will need more oxen, and you will go along slower and hold up the other folks.
I have to ride in the wagon more than I like to. The motion is very disagreeable, especially for the older folk. The wagons are called prairie schooners, and Grandma says it is just like being seasick.
The men and boys will need 4 or 5 hickory shirts, buckskin pants, a buckskin hunting shirt, and 3 or 4 pairs of boots. You'll need a couple of good wide-brimmed hats to stop you getting ulcers from the sunburn. The women won't be doing any of the real hard work like driving the wagons, herding the stock, hunting, fighting off the Indians. All they have to do is the cooking and the sewing, so they won't need anything different from their ordinary clothes. Bring along some braids and beads, cheap red ribbons, and some blue calico to barter with the Indians, along with cash to pay them for the ferries.
When we got to Fort Laramie, in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, there were some messages from home there for us. but I shall have to wait till we meet up with someone traveling back to send this. I will write you again when I can. I am sure Mother will be well and strong again very soon. Your loving niece, Lucy.
Don't let the women folk bring along too many fancy items, such as furniture, china, and preserves, as you will only have tears and troubles when you find you cannot carry them as they overload the wagon and you have to leave them behind.
Poor man was beside himself. Oh, it was all over so fast.
How did it happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, the plain was black with buffalo, as far as you could see. Some of the boys were out hunting. And then suddenly, 20 or 30 of the beasts broke away from the rest, stampeded right through the wagon train. The men tried to head them off, but they couldn't.
Stupid great animals. Doesn't matter what's in their way, nothing on this earth can stop them.
Oh, that poor little woman.
Yeah, she was out of the wagon, walking alongside.
Mm-hmm.
I think she might even have been driving the team. Oh, she didn't have a chance to get out of the way. She was trampled, and the oxen were scattered.
Oh. And now Robert McHale's left on his own with those two little girls.
That's right. They were inside the wagon when it turned over, but they weren't even scratched.
I don't think I've ever spoken to Mr. McHale. Mm. Thomas says he's a good, hard-working man and talks a lot of sense at the meetings.
She was a quiet little slip of a thing. A lot younger than him. The girls favor her.
Who's taking care of them?
They've not finished putting the stones on the mother's grave yet.
Well, I think we should see if Mr. McHale would like us to take care of his little girl.
Oh.
Elizabeth?
Well, Riley, have a bit of common sense. You've only been on your feet yourself 2 days. It could have been you we were putting under the stones. There are others malfitted.
But it wasn't. And I'm well and strong again. And two little girls have no mother, and a decent man is probably at his wit's end and half out of his mind with grief. Saturday, July 4th. We celebrated Independence Day with a grand concert. The men fired their guns, and we recited the parts of the Declaration we could remember. Although we are not yet halfway, we raised our glasses to both East and West and drank a toast. I faced West because that is where we are going, and the East is now locked away in my memory. There's a great deal of sickness. Camp fever, bloody flux, the measles, and there's constant talk of cholera. Virginia continues to thrive, but she's very undersized. Met a party returning from California, very dissatisfied with the country. They had no rain for 3 years, and all their stock died.
The Platte River. Well, we got across it easy enough this time. Hard to ford, no fish, too dirty to bathe in, and too thick to drink. And when we've followed it as far as we can, we'll still only be halfway.
You thinking of turning back, McHale?
No. I always said to Susan, once you're past Fort Laramie, it makes as much sense to go on as back.
You're bound for Oregon?
Yes.
You had no thoughts of changing your mind and making for California instead?
No. I guess I'll finish what we set out to do.
Never any question about it with us either.
My pa said Oregon, and that was it. But he didn't even make the start of the journey.
He's probably better off that way.
I'm sorry about your wife.
Yes. We had nothing left back in Iowa. We had to set out. The only sense I can make of it is to keep going.
Yes, I believe you're right. There's not much else you can do. But it's hard to lose your... You ready to roll tomorrow?
Yes, the boys rounded up the oxen and righted the wagon. No real damage done.
Nope. My old woman's been sick these past few weeks. I've been expecting her to... But it's harder when it's out of the blue and over in a few minutes.
Yes.
I'd like to suggest that you give some thought to changing your plans. I have a growing feeling that it's California we should be making for.
Well, why change once you've made your choice?
I don't like the way this company's run. Too much fighting, too many bosses, and too many orders that don't make sense. Huh. Following in other folks' dust and camping on other folks' mud patch, it's like pitching your tents in a barnyard. We should split into groups of maybe 10 or 15 wagons, make our decisions together, and choose a captain who's there and knows what he's doing.
You?
Well, maybe. Or you.
No, I'm not making any decisions for anybody else.
Well, then, whoever.
10 or 15 of you can still go to Oregon. Why change your mind now?
Most of them traveling back east with news are all for California.
Unless you get talking to the ones that are all for Oregon.
Well, I'd stake my life on Lansford Hastings. I have read and reread his guide. You could say I was inspired to make the journey by him. They're saying he has traveled a new route to California, which is hundreds of miles nigher.
Hasn't driven a wagon through, though, has he?
It's a direct route. It has to take a month off the journey.
Oh, yes, it's direct enough. Direct south of the Great Salt Lake and direct across the Salt Desert. Now, I haven't laid eyes on either of them, but they don't sound to me like the kind of places where you're going to find too much water or grass.
You can travel faster on level ground.
You still end up in the Sierra Nevada.
Or the Blue Mountains on the Oregon Trail. Just think about it. Don't you want an easier, faster trip?
I am thinking that the United States is at war with Mexico over California, and I'm not taking my family into a battleground, and I don't trust Hastings.
I'm disappointed in you, Mikhail. I thought you might show some spirit of adventure. Now you've only yourself to look to.
You're right. There's too much fighting and argument, so I won't take offense at what you just said. I just ask you to remember, if you will, to be...
I beg your pardon. But I will not hear slander of Mr. Hastings. I believe his motives to be of the purest.
Fine, let's leave aside his motives. I don't trust cutoffs. 75 men, women, and children died taking a new cutoff to Oregon last year. Riding through the territory on your own or with a couple of Indians is not the same as driving a wagon train through.
But the Hastings cutoff is to California, and Mr. Hastings knows what he is talking about.
Did you have any talk with James Clyman back at Fort Laramie?
No.
I did. He's a friend of Hastings, and he traveled the cutoff. The party from Springfield, the Reeds and the Dollars are all for taking it, but Clyman was quite definite. He told them he thought a straight route might be impracticable. They should take the regular wagon track and never leave it. It is barely possible to get through if you follow it, and it may be impossible if you don't.
But you said it yourself. The ones who died were on their way to Oregon. That's where there's danger.
And there's Indians wherever you go. I got my plan smashed when Susan was killed. It doesn't matter where I go. I'm not going to beat my brains to death wondering what I should do now. I'm just going to yoke up the oxen to my wagon and keep on following the way they've gone before and not bother about wars or cutoffs. If I get there, I'll decide what to do.
Wednesday, July 8th. We stayed in camp today for the saddest of reasons.
We buried Mrs. Susan McHale, who was killed in a buffalo stampede. Her husband is left with two little girls. I cannot write of the emotions roused in me by that sad ceremony. Mr. McHale had fashioned a coffin from the sideboards of the wagon and carved her name upon it. A large stone marks the place. It is a melancholy thought that one so young, with such hopes, should lie there forever.
Mr. McHale? Mr. McHale, please forgive me for breaking in on your thoughts in this sad place. We are all deeply saddened by your terrible loss.
Yes.
Would you mind? Would you think it presuming if I planted this little jessamine bush on her grave?
You can do as you please. I don't want attention drawn to it.
Well, then I won't. I'm sorry.
No, ma'am. It's a kindly thought. An unmarked stone on a flower bush I'm going to give away what's below. You, go ahead.
There. I hope it thrives and perhaps makes a little memorial for her daughters. I don't think it makes it obvious what it is to anyone else.
The wolves won't get into her coffin. I don't want her robbed. She was a modest girl. Well, Mrs. Riley, we've done all we can. The body will rot under that stone and that jessamine bush, and the preacher tells me a soul is already in heaven. When I walk away from this grave, that's the last I'll see of it. I won't ever come back, and in time I probably won't even remember where it is. And if I carved her name on the stone, nobody following would know who she was. She was scared of this journey. I was going to go alone and go back for them when I'd found the best route, but she said we'd be better traveling together as a family.
There's one other thing I want to ask you, Mr. McHale. Would you permit me to take care of your daughters?
You, have your own family to look to?
Yes, I have a baby daughter who needs a lot of care if she's to thrive, which keeps me in the wagon most of the day. We share the work with my mother-in-law and my daughter, Lucy. She's 15 and a good, sensible girl. Your girls be well looked after, and you'd have no worries about the cooking and the mending.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm grateful to you. If Mr. Riley has no objections, I'll be glad to accept your kind offer. Good day to you, ma'am.
Oh, dear Lord, don't let me. Please, if it is your will, I could not bear to be left here alone like this poor girl.
Oh, for goodness sake, Martha, put a smile on your face.
I'm perfectly happy. I just feel a little uneasy.
Well, don't let George hear you say that.
What are you worrying about now? Rebecca's just what he needs.
Oh, I'm not worried about those two. It's all too quick, and I don't think they've thought about it too much, but they'll suit each other fine. As long as Rebecca doesn't change her mind and get engaged to somebody else. I always thought she favored Francis.
Rebecca's got too much sense to settle down with a lad that ran away from college. Wanders along the trail with a whip in one hand and a bulk in the other.
Francis is a very reliable driver and a good reliable boy.
Oh, well, he'll do for Lucy then. I'll have to put my mind to that now I've got George and Rebecca settled.
I don't want Lucy married yet. She's too young.
Oh, you were only 16 when Thomas brought you to see me. We all know Lucy should have been born a lad. But you're not going to change her destiny by pretending she is one. The best thing you can do for her is to make sure she keeps her sunbonnet pulled down close and her gloves on, so that when we get to Oddigham, they don't think we've stolen her from the Indians.
What are your plans for Virginia?
Now, don't you try getting sharp with me. You'll come off worse. Well, you couldn't do better for Lucy than see her settled with a nice, mannered, bookish Yankee like Francis.
Just because they like reading the same books.
Well, they're not reading now, are they? I'd say they were dancing and singing, but she's as it should be.
married. Lucy's a young woman. Let her go.
You've got a real baby to worry about now.
Lucy is a clever, loving girl. I don't think she's shown the slightest sign of...
Oh, come on. Don't fret. I know what your trouble is. You didn't look to have another child, did you?
No. Lucy's 15. I thought... When Lucy was born back in New Salem, Granny Spears, she brought all the babies into the world and cured everything. She buried the afterbirth and made me walk across the ground it was buried. She promised me it would bring an end to my childbirth.
Well, there's only one way you can do that, to my way of thinking.
But if you're one for all these outlandish practices that don't work to keep your family down, what are you taking on these two motherless nights?
If you'd only seen them sitting there in the wagon.
No.
Not daring to move. All her things around them. She had a little escritoire and a walnut chest with her pretty dresses inside. I never saw her in anything but that old dark dress and her sunbonnet. She had a figured muslin and the most elegant blue silk dress in that chest. And a straw bonnet with pink roses, ribbons, gloves. Oh, and the finest quilt. There was a little piece of paper pinned to it. Poem. 'Tis farewell then, O sister dear. We ne'er shall meet again as I journey on with grief and fear across this weary plain. As darkness falls and we make halt, the waters of this bitter stream by my fallen tears are made more salt as of my lost home I dream. Susan Jane Redding McHale. I brought it away with me in case it distressed Mr. McHale any further. I'll give it back to him when we get there.
Gonna have to watch that one, George. Did you mean that, Becky?
It's a song, George. And I've agreed to marry you, haven't I? Moore baked the tomato pie and made this lemonade to celebrate our engagement. And you're worried about a song.
The men in the California party didn't want to go on ahead. They reckoned the girls in the Oregon wagons were the prettiest. Thought I'd better put my marker down now.
Is that so? Well, I have my own marker for you. I shall expect you to behave like a real Yankee husband. My Aunt Edna says they're four of the best. Do a great deal for their wives and look after them so nicely.
We'll see about that.
I have a few rules for you as well. No swearing in my presence. No card playing on Sundays. Come to meeting with me once in a while and sing the hymns as if you meant it. Don't get drunk too often. Build me a house with a parlor when we get to Oregon. And never, ever call me your old woman in my hearing.
Have you been talking to my mother? All these fancy ideas?
Those are my terms.
Sounds more like Francis than me.
Yes, George, but I like you better than Francis. And I don't want a real Yankee.
Friday, July 10th. Thomas has not confided his plans to me yet, but I very much fear that he is tempted to change our destination. To my joy, Governor Boggs and Colonel Boone have decided to leave the California party and travel to Oregon. Governor Boggs is very much afraid the Mormons are traveling to California. I think he fears them more than he fears the Indians. Just as I was beginning to hope that Thomas might be persuaded by this action, a lone horseman rode into camp. He's Mr. Wales B. Bonney, traveling back to the States from Oregon. The men crowded around him, seeking his views on the two countries we are bound for, and we were sent off with orders to look to our domestic duties. Surely if Mr. Bonney is returning from Oregon, that must be his chosen land.
That's a very disdainful glance, Miss Lucy. Am I to take it that you don't approve of Independence Rock?
I was expecting it to be so high you couldn't see the top. Not as wide. Have you been on guard?
Yes. What are you doing here this time of the morning? You shouldn't be here on your own. The Indians might take you.
I'll walk back with you. I have to be back to help with breakfast anyway. Don't you start, Francis. Just wanted to be by myself for a while. I get tired of remembering to put my mittens on to keep my hands white and remembering to scream in a ladylike way when they mention the engines.
Well, it's no use pretending they're not there, that they're not dangerous. And half the time you don't know if they're friends or hostile till too late.
I know. Just thought I'd take the risk they wouldn't kidnap me this morning.
Don't you be too sure. You see that pine growing out of the groove in the rock about halfway up?
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, Mr. Hastings himself climbed up there to take a look. Got captured by the Sioux. Held him for 3 days.
Pity they ever let him go. My father keeps talking about him as if he was some sort of divine being. My mother goes as pale as death at the merest mention. I got over my disappointment at the rock's unimposing height when I saw it with all the others yesterday. I wanted to take another look, so I sneaked out of the wagon before anyone else was awake. Came here by myself.
You gonna carve your name on it with all the others?
No. No, it makes me think of a gigantic tombstone. I want to carve Mrs. Susan McHale and Mr. Joe Baston and that little boy who fell under the wagon and Martha Hutchinson Riley.
Oh, Lucy, please, don't cry. That's not gonna... This is a memorial to the living. Well, that's the only reason to carve your mother's name there. We remember the others in different ways. But the people who carve their names here are proud of what they're doing. They want the rest of us to enjoy reading their names. They're saying, I passed this way, now it's your turn.
Are you going to carve your name?
I'm just a hired man.
I don't want to keep feeling morbid like this. Oh, it was such a good adventure when we started. Now I keep waking up before everybody else, wondering if my mother has a fever again or whether my sister will wake up at all. And then I have to take care of Cora and Abby McHale, and they cry so much I can't stop them. I used to be so excited by everything. Now I just pass by all these wonders. Chimney Rock, Ash Creek, Courthouse Rock, and that's why I got up early. I thought, what's wrong with me? I can't look at something as awe-inspiring as Independence Rock and feel nothing.
In a few miles, we're going to come to the Devil's Gate. It's where the Sweetwater makes the gap in the mountain hundreds of feet high. Will you let me take you to look at it when we get there? Without the others.
I'll see. Why did you come along as our team, Mr. Francis? You're much cleverer than George.
I saw your father's advertisement for young men of good character. Westward ho! My father wanted me to be a lawyer. I didn't enjoy the study, so I ran away from college and home. Pa doesn't mention my name anymore, but he allows Mama to receive letters from me. So if I become a worthy and respected citizen and help to wrest Oregon back from the British and hand it over to the United States and make a colossal fortune, he may relent and reinstate me as a member of the family.
And is it very different back east, New York?
Oh, very. You can breathe here. Think for yourself. Build your own life instead of fitting into somebody else's. That's why I joined up as a hired man, so that I can be a really free man at the end of the journey.
Oh, free.
Listen, I'm going to lend you my copy of Pilgrim's Progress to remind you that this is not the worst journey ever made. And Pilgrim does get out of the slough despond, and you will decide whether to wear your mittens or not in Oregon.
Which is a cut-off of Vanity Fair.
Sunday, July 12th. I can still learn nothing of my husband's intentions. I'm concerned for his bodily health as well as his mental state, for I can only see it as madness to think of changing all our plans for a whim. No. Scratch that out.
I must not write anything so disloyal that might be seen by other eyes. Sunday, July 12th. We are all relieved to have left the barren plains behind us. The beauties that nature has scattered as we begin to approach the South Pass and the Great Divide are wonderful indeed. The ice slough, where we harvest ice from below the swamp grass in July. The great natural basin of Salaratus, white as driven snow near Independence Rock. We filled our bags with it. It is better than the baking soda we brought with us, and returning travelers tell us there is very little to be had in Oregon.
Mr. Barney, you are returning from a place that we have only seen in our dreams. Mm. Can you advise us?
Gentlemen, I am a humble messenger, but I have a proud message for y'all, and it will be my pleasure and my duty to take all the letters you have written to your loved ones back in the States. Mm. And I will give you my word of honor that each and every one of them will reach its destination. I have traveled alone from Oregon, my worldly goods on pack mule, and I will return next year. I wintered in the Willamette Valley, and I could spend many hours singing the praises of that exciting country, and many more hours singing the praises of California.
Mm. Why are you singing the praises of California if you're from Oregon? Last party of travelers hadn't a good word for the place. Nothing but drought and poor soil. Never rains and you can't grow grain.
The climate in Oregon's more temperate. California's got a bigger harbor, and you can grow fruit in abundance.
My brother Nathan and I, we're one of the only two bachelor wagons in this company. We're not tied to a family, so we can feel free to go where it seems fitting. We're aiming to travel to Fort Hall and then decide whether we turn right or left. We've a mind to get to the Umpqua Valley, and if we don't like it, well, why, we're only a couple hundred miles from California by a well-traveled road.
If you're a bachelor wagon, why don't you strike out on the greatest adventure of the century, gentlemen? I have ridden here alone to give you the opportunity to make history.
Some of us just want to make a living.
I said I am a messenger, and I am carrying the most important message to come out of the West. I have a letter from Lansford W. Hastings himself to all immigrants on the road, and a promise. He will wait for you at Fort Bridger, and he'll personally lead you across his new route to California, saving more than 300 miles.
Why is Mr. Hastings so anxious for us all to go to California?
You needn't think we're going to be part of any adventure stirring up a revolution against the Mexicans and dragging us along to immortalize them.
Gentlemen, if Mr. Hastings is merely consumed with political ambition, why is he waiting for you himself? That is not the action of an ambitious and unscrupulous exploiter of his fellow men. It seems to me that Mr. Hastings is full of an unselfish desire to lead his compatriots into the garden of the earth.
Has he led a single wagon across this cutoff?
He has ridden every inch of the way. Captain Fremont mapped the whole of the territory in 45 from the Colorado River to the Bay of San Francisco. He rode this route and concluded that the road would be even better for wagons.
What about grazing and water for the stock in the salt desert?
Captain Fremont and Mr. Hastings proved that the Great Basin is not a barren plain. There are mountains, woods, the best kind of grasses. You fill your kegs with water, you travel so fast you reach the Humboldt River before you had time to empty them.
How long will Mr. Hastings wait?
As long as he needs.
I'm not afraid of nothing.
You heard enough. But aren't you convinced by Mr. Bonney?
I've already made up my mind. Mr. Hastings' letter just proves I'm right.
I agree with Thomas Putnam. We can't be sure about Hastings' motives. The one thing we can be sure about, though, is nobody who spent more than half an hour with Wales D. Bonney has a good word to say about him. My wife's uncle has a Breton Methodist, Reverend Gary, who settled in Oregon City in 1944. He can't abide Bonney. There's only Bonnie's word for it that he wintered in the Willamette Valley. Nobody saw him there.
Well, if it's a lie, it's a pretty harmless one.
Not just a liar, though. There's some very ugly rumors that he murdered a man in his party the winter he was in Oregon. And the man was carrying an amount of money that was never found.
So what? He's only the messenger. If you don't trust Mr. Hastings and you don't like Bonnie, you're a free agent. Go follow the old road to Oregon and stop trying to change my mind for me.
Mrs. Riley and Lucy are taking care of my daughters. Susan's daughters. I'm bound by them into your company.
Then you'd better keep quiet and follow my lead.
The only reason I'm trying to tell you, you're just plain wrong to even think about taking this cut off.
Tuesday, July 14th. We laid up for the last 2 days on the banks of the Sweetwater to rest our lame oxen. Thomas is very sick, I believe. He has a cough, and I think he is concealing from us how weak he is becoming. I am writing this on my lap, my baby beside me, lulled to sleep by the wind rocking the wagon. We are between Table Rock and the Wind River Mountains. This is the highest ground we have traveled over yet.
Martha, I've sent Lucy to fetch George, Francis, and Mother. I've made a decision, and I need to tell you all what it is.
Am I allowed to know what you have decided?
When the others get here.
Thomas, I'm your wife. I have followed you obediently wherever you have chosen to go. I've worked alongside you without complaining, and I have never questioned your wisdom since the day we were married. Do I have to wait in line with my children and the hired man to be given my orders?
George and Francis are more nearly affected than you. This is men's work.
And the well-being of your children and you in health or sickness is woman's work. Seems to me we share the hardships on this journey. Haven't I earned the right to share your decision?
Martha, I didn't know if you were going to live or die a couple of months back. These decisions are my burden, not yours. I have to do what is best for all of us.
Cora, Abby, now don't go wandering away. Come on, Cora. Indians are catching a sack. Take your way. Now pray over there.
I have something to say that you all need to hear. I've thought about this very hard, and I am convinced that we will be doing the right thing. For the last year and a half, we've thought about nothing else but getting to Oregon. I've changed my mind. We're going to California.
Oh, wow.
Just a minute, Lucy. George, are you with me on this?
Huh?
Francis, you signed up for Oregon. What do you think?
What are your reasons, Mr. Riley?
Well, first of all, it seems that all the aristocracy of this company, as Tom Putnam likes to call them, are going to California. People who've been pretty successful back in the States, like the Donner Brothers, Charles Stanton, James Fraser Reed, who came west looking for new opportunity, not because they had to because they'd gone broke, but because they knew they were going to be even more successful in California.
Governor Boggs is going to Oregon.
Not anymore. Another change of heart.
I've had to listen to a lot of powerful criticism of Oregon from people traveling back east.
And California.
But the strongest reason is the difficulties and dangers of the journey. My blood ran cold when I heard how you have to inch away along the cliff ledge on the Snake River, cross and recross the Snake, the Boise, and the Malheur Rivers, get across the scrub desert, hostile Indians most of the way. The only way to get the wagons across the Blue Mountains is by rope, pulley, and muscle. Then, when you get to the Dalles River, you have to pay the Indians to ferry you across. Then you load everything you possess into canoes and let the Indians take you down the Columbia River. We're 2/3 of the way there, but the hardest part is still to come.
A lot of the company have decided to make for California. The Oregon Trail looks tougher to them.
I know. I've talked to them. We can't get to Oregon until October, maybe November. We could be in the Sacramento Valley by the beginning of September, August even.
When we get to Fort Hall, we turn off down the California Trail.
No. When we get to the Little Sandy, we strike south to Fort Bridger and take the Hastings Cutoff, south of the Great Salt Lake, round the Ruby Mountains, and join the old road back to the Humboldt River.
It's an untried route.
It has been tried by Mr. Hastings, and he will be waiting at Fort Bridger to lead us across.
Well, what about Mr. McHale?
Or what about him?
Well, we're taking care of Cora and Abigail. He's going to Oregon, isn't he? Or would he change his mind and come with us?
Robert McHale must make up his own mind. He's not our concern.
Well, Cora and Abby stay with us.
Be quiet, Lucy.
Mother?
Well, we go is your business. I went where your father decided. Now he's been taken, you're head of the family.
George?
That's what I've been thinking.
Francis.
Well, you hired me to drive the team, Mr. Riley, so you decide the way.
You have anything to say, Martha?
No.
Mother.
No. I have nothing to say.
Thursday, July 16th. We have crossed the Great Divide without our knowing it. The ridge where we nooned yesterday, with a large table mound on our left, was the turning point between the Atlantic and the Pacific. We camped by a small sandy stream. We noted that the streams are flowing to the west. Now even the tides are sweeping us inexorably westwards.
It's wonderfully beautiful, isn't it? The sun going down behind the snow-capped mountains.
Yes.
I wonder how long it'll be before watching the sun go down into the ocean.
Yes.
Would you like some of these strawberries?
Oh.
I came up here to be by myself for a while and found these.
Oh, thank you. We're privileged, aren't we? Sitting here surrounded by all this beauty, eating strawberries, even without the cream.
Oh, yes. We're privileged.
It's rather a melancholy thought, isn't it? After so long a journey, that we're going to go our separate ways. When we get to the little Sandy in a few days' time, we shall be saying goodbye to so many friends.
Yes, that's what I keep coming back to.
Are you bound for California?
We set out for Oregon, but my husband has been swayed by Mr. Hastings' arguments.
Ah, and you're not?
No.
Neither am I, Mrs. Riley. Mr. Hastings is very persuasive, but I can't get it out of my mind that he's nothing but a selfish adventurer.
Everyone's so elated, so excited in the California party. I came up here to get away. I don't want to be the skeleton at the feast. Everybody's singing and laughing and cheering, and here am I. I can't shake off these misgivings.
Yes, I am elated to be going to California, too. But I do wish we were going by the old road.
Oh, Mrs. Donner, have you told anyone how you feel? Won't anyone listen?
It's a waste of time. Men don't make their big decisions by listening to the silly fears of weaker vessels.
This is how Mr. Baston was.
Yes. I'm very afraid, Lucy. He's been trying to hide this for days now. He's made himself much weaker by pretending not to be sick.
What are we going to do when we get to Fort Bridger if Pa's too sick to talk to Mr. Hastings? Will George? Or Francis?
I don't know.
Martha.
Yes? What is it?
Give me some water.
Yes. Lucy, fill this cup, quickly. Here, my dear. Let me help you sit up. Yes. Give me the cup. Here we are. Drink this.
How long we get? Little
Sandy. Not yet. Don't worry. I'll tell you. It'll be days yet. Lie down. Try to sleep. Get your strength back.
Mother, we'll be there by noon.
I know. When we stop, I want to speak to all of you. And ask Mr. McHale to come over as well.
As you know, Mr. Riley's very sick. He's sleeping now, and it is not a healthy sleep. I hope he will recover, but I fear he may not. He was awake for a little while. He took some water and spoke about what he wants us to do. Lucy and I were with him. He could only speak with great difficulty and pain. He indicated to me, to us,
that he does not think he is strong enough to lead us by an untried route. He does not want to take Mr. Hastings' cutoff.
Mm-hmm. Is that what happened, Lucy?
Yes. He asked for a drink of water, and then how far we were from the little Sandy.
Let me look at him.
No,
don't worry. I won't wake him if he's sleeping.
So where does he want us to go?
Oregon, as we planned.
Why not California by the old road?
I don't know.
I don't believe you. I think you're lying.
Sure.
That'll do. Why should she do that with your father maybe dying?
Because she doesn't want to go to California. Because she can't live with anything new. She doesn't understand you have to take risks. Pa talked to me. We talked to folk on the trail. He read Mr. Hastings' letter. So did I. He'd made up his mind. He wasn't going to take notice of foolish women's fears.
He could have changed his mind to protect his family. If he felt too weak to take charge himself.
Is that all right? He's asleep or unconscious. He might pull through, but he looks too much like his father did for me to have much hope. If we lose him, while he's not able, George is head of this family. When my husband died, I looked to my son. I suggest you do the same.
I intend to. George, will you become leader of our little party?
Yes. And I shall take us to California, the direct way across the Great Basin.
No, that will not happen. Your father is still alive, and it is against his express wish. He changed his mind. I will not allow you to disobey him.
We only have your word for it.
And mine.
That doesn't amount to anything. You always say what she wants to hear. Francis, we go to Fort Bridger.
No, our wagons are going to Fort Hall and on to Oregon, as Thomas wishes. Francis?
Well, Mr. Riley hired me, and I have to do what he wants. If you tell me that's what he said, I must believe you.
Then I shall take that way myself.
If you do, you go with someone else's hired hand. I will not break my word given to a dying man. Mr. McHale, if my son will not carry out his father's wishes, will you take charge of our company?
I'll be glad to, ma'am.
There'll be no need. Not having strangers doing my job.
Thank you, George. Then we turn right at the Little Sandy and drive on to Fort Hall with the main party. Excuse me. I have to look after my husband.
I don't believe a word of any of that, Martha. But you got Lucy to back you, and I can't prove you're wrong, so I shall have to go along with it. Thomas is like his father. He's pig-headed. You wouldn't get either of them to change their minds once they were set. But I think you'll rue the day you humiliated George like that. He may be slow, but he's got his head screwed on. You're not wise to show that you'll always turn to his sister before him.
What happens if, when Paul gets better, and if he might not remember that he changed his mind?
Well, you'll have to take a few more lessons in play acting from your mother.
Mother!
Oh, don't bother me anymore. I've seen too much. I've travelled too far to take sides. You're probably right, and Thomas is probably wrong. I'm too old and too tired to fathom the ins and outs of it.
Thursday, August 6th. We reached Fort Holliday and camped a mile below the fort on a fertile plain. Captain Grant, who is in charge of the fort, says the road to Oregon is very hard and perilous. Saturday, August 8th. My beloved Papa died today. We shall bury him and mark his grave with a stone carved with his name. My mother has not kept her diary since Pa was taken sick. I cannot bear the sadness of Pa's death. All along the trail, I was afraid for my mother, not liking to go too far from the wagon in case I should find her gone when I returned. But I never thought that my dear, strong Papa would be taken sick and die. He was in a terrible delirium and never knew that we were not taking the cutoff. Monday, August 10th. It is melancholy what is happening to us. Grandma is very quiet, not sick, but old. George, after one last bitter quarrel with Mother when Pa died, has gone the old road to California with Becky and the Swains wagon. He said he was going to carry out Pa's wishes. We're his sad, dispirited party now, after all our hopes. Thursday, August 13th. Saw three bodies lying on top of the earth, their clothes torn off and their arms and legs hacked. I wish the Indians did not do this. They can be gentle and trustful when we barter with them, mostly. We buried the bodies again. Mr. Jesse Applegate came into camp and talked of a new route to Oregon. Mr. McHale says he does not trust any of these road hunters, and we will take the old road. The smell of the dead animals along the way is very bad. Monday, September 27th. The worst road yet. Past four graves. The wagons bumping over the tree roots and plunging into deep mud holes. Cedars, redwoods, pines, and firs towering 300 feet high, cutting out the light. Very little feed for the stock. Two of our oxen were poisoned by eating laurel. Horses, mules, mine dead. Abandoned wagons. The smell of a carrion. My mother-in-law, too weak to walk. Unable to ride in the wagon. She rides on a mule with Virginia. The girls and I walk to lighten the wagon. Weather very cold. When it rains, there is snow on the mountaintops.
Mother, why don't you shelter in the wagon?
No. I don't want every bone in my body broken. I'll trust my mule to keep out of the mud holes. I'm safer out than in.
Lucy, why don't you and the children get inside the wagon for a while? You're blue with cold.
I lost those feeling in my feet and my back. I don't think I ought.
We need to get over the ridge before the rain gets any heavier. Have to take the chains that secured back and front.
All right.
Make sure those pines are fixed on the axle. Throw out anything you don't need from the wagon.
Already done.
You and the other women and children get up to the front and pull, and we'll push from the rear. Then, when we get to the top, everybody hang on to the chains at the back to act as a brake.
Those clouds are threatening snow.
Yes, the weather's closing in sooner than we expected. Oh,
we don't have a prayer if we don't get over the pass before the snow comes, do we?
We have a prayer, but not much else.
Everything's loaded onto the mules. What we have left.
Then, let's start praying.
Hold up there.
Thursday, October 1st. We reached the summit of the mountain, dragging, pushing, and hauling, and sliding in the mud, breaking our shins on the rocks, our hands burning and bruised from the ropes and the chains on the pulleys, the men cursing. We ran to the back of the wagon to join the men hanging onto the chains to stop the wagon crashing down the mountainside. The pine trees secured to the axle slid over the mud instead of acting as brakes as they were supposed to. Then the worst happened. The chain snapped like a dry twig, and the wagon that had brought us so far careered down the mountainside and smashed in 1,000 pieces hundreds of feet below.
The worst was not over when we reached the Columbia River. Oh, worst of rivers, fast-flowing and full of rapids. Paid the Indians to ferry us downriver in their canoes. Wind, violent, dashing the canoes back to the shore. Waves washing over our heads, drenching us. Women and children screaming in terror. It took 3 days to cross that dreadful river. Numb with cold and soaked to the skin, we fell with relief on the sandy shore and lay all night in our wet clothes.
Just look at us. What a lot of scarecrows. I'm going to find a decent bonnet and a clean frock if I can. And I'm going to lead the way now we've got here. I've lost my husband and my son, and probably my grandson. So I reckon I've earned the right.
I traded 2 yoke of oxen for this cabin. There's an acre planted to potatoes out back. You and Mrs. Hannah and Lucy can move straight in.
Mr. McHale, will you be taking Cora and Abby back to your wagon?
I guess so.
They won't want to be parted from Lucy. She's been like a mother to them.
Yes.
Mr. McHale, there's no sense in beating about the bush. What we've been through, the state we're in. I didn't look to get to Oregon destitute. I had silly dreams of a gracious life, Lucy being a school teacher and growing up finding her own way. Thomas dying changed all that. I don't know yet what I'm going to do. I shall have to care for Virginia and Mother. You have no one to look after your girls. Would you marry Lucy? Your daughters love her already. You could take care of her.
That's your plan. She's too young. I was too old for Susan. She was my young wife, and I don't look to have another.
This isn't the place to be a man on your own.
No. There'll be plenty of young men queuing up to marry Lucy. She's more suited to Francis.
Francis won't stay here. He's a wanderer.
Maybe. And maybe he'll take Lucy wandering with him. Mrs. Riley, it seems to me that the practical thing to do would be for me to marry you.
Me?
We're both widowed. Neither of us young. Both got a lot to do. And both of us have the things we want to forget.
It's so empty, isn't it, now that we're here? All that effort. Here we are standing in a log cabin with no windows, looking out on emptiness. Asking ourselves, is this what we've come 2,000 miles for? That restless spirit, that hungry curiosity. Why did I drag everyone along this last terrible path? Perhaps the people we parted from at the Little Sandy have been in California since September, without losing everything. What now? Where's my angry son, who punished me for not respecting his authority? No, for lying to him. Will I see him again? To tell him I betrayed my dying husband and made us all suffer because I had the arrogance to mistrust Mr. Hastings' promises? I shall probably marry this kindly man who is still grieving for the wife he couldn't keep alive. His diary. The pages soaked in the rivers, dried in the sun, written in the wagon that's lying in pieces in the Blue Mountains, where my daughter was born and my husband died. Now I write in the unaccustomed stillness. Wednesday, October the 28th, 1846, Burlington, Oregon. 3 or 4 houses, a blacksmith shop, 1 store. The end of the journey.
In The Westward Journey by Ellen Dryden. Martha Riley was played by Carolyn Jones, Lucy by Tracy Ann Oberman, and Hannah by Marcia Ward. Thomas Riley was played by Bradley Lavelle, George by Nathan Osgood, Robert McHale, David Bannerman, Francis Lander, David Brooks, Elizabeth Swain, Mia Soterio, Rebecca, Allison Pettit, Jonah and Bonnie, Mac McDonald, Mrs. Donner, Liza Ross, and Charles Putnam, Alan Marriott. Songs arranged and additional music by Mia Soterio. Music performed by Steve Bentley Klein, Nathan Osgood, and Mia Soterio. The Westward Journey was directed by Ned Shire.